What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What's good, Atlanta? This is the Bloggadirty Podcast, where a dirty bird is the word if you haven't heard. I'm your host, John Bueller, lead writer, fan-sided. It's week one's here, everybody. Could not be more excited. Your beloved Atlanta Falcons will be taking on the rival division rival Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home from Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Sunday afternoon. All offseason long, we've been hoping, wanting, waiting, wishing to see this team play and see if this team is really going to get us back into the playoffs for the first time in 7 years. Before we begin, make sure to like and subscribe to Blog and Dirty on all platforms. Hit that like button, smash that subscribe button. We're all in this together. On the previous episode of the Blog and Dirty podcast, I mentioned that the Falcons are going to win the division with something like an 11-6 record. I think the way I put it out there was like something to the tune of like the sixth tiebreaker over the Buccaneers. And it starts with them splitting. And it starts with them getting a win this week at home versus the Buccaneers, a team that has dealt with some injuries. We know that Tristan Wirfs is probably going to be out. We know Jalen McMillan's dealing with stuff out at a wide receiver. We also know that Chris Godwin's working his way back from a dislocated ankle. So let's keep the winning streak alive versus the Buccaneers here and get to 1-0 and get Penix, I think, his second home win of his career. So, yeah, let's start the season off with a bang. So let's start with our first topic today with a vibe check. You know, how are we feeling heading into the season? We've seen all three preseason games. Falcons didn't come away with a victory in any of them, whether that would be the Lions, the Titans or the Cowboys, but let's be real. None of that really matters when it comes to the preseason. It's all about putting in the work. It's all about rounding out the roster. And I think more importantly, it's about coming into the season with a clean bill of health. There were guys in the preseason that I thought really shined. You look at the likes of Nathan Carter and Natron Brooks, like earning roster spots with this team, among other things. But there's also a downside. Obviously, the worst part about it all was the Caleb McGarry injury. He's now out for the year. He did get paid, though, but I probably wish buyer's remorse, you're doomed if you do, doomed if you don't kind of sort of thing here. But I'll touch on that more in a minute. Kirk Cousins is still on the team. Michael Penix Jr. is the starter for this team. And just really excited about the season ahead, kind of cautiously optimistic here. You're kind of at the point right now where like it's two ships passing in the night with the Buccaneers. How much longer are they going to stay on top of the division? And are the Falcons going to eventually pass them? We know that Carolina is certainly on the come up. They may be a year away from being a year away, but the Panthers are starting to do more positive than negative. And as for the Saints, it's going to be a rough year for them. And again, I'll touch on the division here shortly as well. But I feel positive about this team, maybe not as much as I was before the start of preseason and training camp and everything like that. There's still some concerns about the coaching staff. I also realized today is Raheem Morris's birthday. Happy birthday, coach. Fellow Virgo like myself. I think I have a birthday coming up here next week, probably after next week's show. So, yeah, we're getting older, but the season's still the same age. Anyway, as I'm really trying to look at this team in this season positively, like just impress me, Falcons. Like just go out there and prove to me like why you and I and everybody watching this program like should still be a fan of this team. We're all in. We're fully invested. Again, there are no bandwagon Falcons fans left, but we've put a lot of time, effort, and energy in this team, and it's time for the crops to be harvested, so to speak. So I'm entering this season with a good bit of expectations. Let me put it this way. I'll be very disappointed if this team does not make the playoffs. I would prefer to see them win the division and win a home playoff game, because I think the city and this fan base deserves it. I was at Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Sunday covering a college football game, South Carolina versus Virginia Tech. That place is immaculate. You and I and everybody who loves this team knows it. This city, this fan base, and this team deserves to have a home playoff game at Mercedes-Benz before the season. Before the stadium's a decade old. Like, let's make that happen. So, to really tie a bow on this, I'm very excited. I'm going to be, you know, a ball of nerves in the hours leading up to kickoff on Sunday morning. But I want the team to go out there and win. More importantly, I don't want them to get embarrassed. And I don't think that that's really what we need to start the season out as. It's going to be close, and I'll touch on that kind of more with the final segment for today's show. Right now, like, it could go either way. I wish we had an easier first opponent. You know, you look at the other teams in the division. I mean, like, the Saints have the Cardinals and the Panthers have the Jaguars. I think that the Buccaneers are better than both the Jaguars and the Cardinals right now. But, again, we've got a whole 18 weeks ahead of us. It's going to be a grind. You are going to win games. You are going to lose games. The best teams in the NFL win something like 13 or 14 games, maybe 12. The worst ones still win about 3 or 4. So just sit back and kind of enjoy the ride here. We got meaningful NFL football right ahead of us, and I could not be more excited. So let's move on to our second topic today with some Captain Falcon. I don't know. I saw that the Falcons have listed 6 guys to be captains for this team. That would be Michael Penix Jr., Chris Lindstrom, Jake Matthews, Jesse Bates III, Caden Ellis, and Bradley Pinion. Some of these guys have been captains for multiple times in Atlanta. Jake Matthews, Jesse Bates have been captains a bunch. It's nice to see Penix and Ellis get it for the first time. Pinion, it could have been him or Koo, but I think Pinion was kind of the more of the guarantee to make the team than Koo, because he was battling with Lenny Craig down the stretch. We all know that Chris Lindstrom is this team's best player. Jesse Bates III, probably right there as well. And I think it's very important to have Penix be a captain as well, because, you know, he is the face of the franchise. And I think more importantly, as I'm looking at these 6 names, and I'll touch on Ellis here in a second, but like, Penix is representing the skill position players more so than anybody. Like, you don't see Bijan Robinson. You don't see Drake London. You don't see Kyle Pitts. You don't see Tyler Allgeier, Ray McCloud III, Kadarius Hodge, who I thought could have been potentially one to represent the special teams as well. I mean, he was a Pro Bowler a season ago. But it's abundantly clear that Atlanta is all in on Penix, for better or worse. It's funny, I was thinking about this. Crazy weekend of college football. His former coach, Kalen DeBoer, did not look good at Alabama versus Florida State. So maybe Penix is just that good. Maybe Penix is the reason that DeBoer's coaching Alabama. I mean, DeBoer was good at Fresno State prior to going to Washington, but Penix was phenomenal for the Huskies, and he was also phenomenal that 1 year or two he was with Indiana. So maybe this is a testament to more of him being the real deal. So that makes me feel really good about Penix at this point. Again, he's got to stay healthy. He's got to be more accurate. But I think more importantly, he's got to continue to have the trust of his teammates. And I think him being a captain certainly does that here. And I would also say, you know, Lindstrom and Matthews being the cornerstones of the offensive line, I think that's a big deal as well, particularly with McGarry being out for the season. Again, we got to talk about guys like Matthew Bergeron, Ryan Neuzel, and now Elijah Wilkinson really stepping up to kind of round out that unit. But I think most teams in the NFL would take Lindstrom and Matthews to be part of their team in a heartbeat. Again, I don't know if the Falcons still have a top 10 offensive line of football, but again, those two guys right there, I could certainly get behind and go into battle with. Again, the big challenge here is Matthews is not protecting Penix's blind side. He's protecting him up front because Penix is, in fact, left-handed. As I look at Bates and Ellis, look, Bates is well on his way towards being a Hall of Fame level player. He wants to be here, and we're lucky to have him. This is a guy that I can't believe the Bengals let him get away. This is a player that I think, like, years from now, we're going to be like, okay, yeah, we were so blessed to have this guy play for us for several years. This is year 3 for him with the Falcons. And I think more importantly, there was a bit of a leadership void, you know, with Grady Jarrett going to the Bears. we needed a guy to kind of step up and be the vocal leader. And again, he's growing into this role. He wasn't necessarily this with the Bengals, but I think the guys like Al Golden, Lou Anarumo, and Zach Taylor empowered him. And I think more importantly, Raheem Morris is really empowering him, as is the case with Jeff Olbrich too. And this is a natural progression for Cade Nells to be a captain. Again, this is a guy that I trust the most in the linebacking core. We know he's the son of a former NFL player in Luther Ellis. His brother plays in the league. This is a guy that's just I realize I spelled his last name wrong on here. That's okay. The point is, with Ellis being a captain, I recognize that like this is his natural progression as a leader and as a cornerstone of the middle of this defense. And then Bradley Pinion, again, like you got to have some guy for special teams. You know, Liam McCall is a great long snapper, but it's got to either be your kicker or your punter. You know, you probably wish it could have been Koo, but again, he struggled a little bit down the stretch. Maybe this gets him a little bit fired up to go out there and have a vintage Young Wei Koo season of old. But like, again, I'm pretty happy with these six guys here. Some maybe caught me by surprise a little bit, but at the same time, like, these are guys that I think are going to represent the organization and the team well going into battle, and that's really all you can ask for. Let's move on to our third topic today with some around the perimeter. Yes, this is going to be anything league encompassing, but today this is going to be mostly focusing in on the NFC South as a whole. So my thoughts on the Falcons, Buccaneers, and the rest of the NFC South. You know, this includes the Panthers and the Saints too. Look, I've talked about this on so many shows up to this point. The Buccaneers are the team to beat in the division. They've been on top of the division the last 4 years. 5 years ago, they won the Super Bowl as a wild card team over the Saints winning the division. It's been a painfully long time since the Falcons and Panthers both made the playoffs, but both teams are certainly gearing up to making that dream a reality here. I think the Falcons are in a much better position right now to do that in 2025 than the Carolina Panthers, but Carolina could be a playoff team in 26, 27, pretty conceivably. If all goes well for them, maybe they can win about 10 games this year in Charlotte. Again, I have them kind of more of a 7-10 team, but that's okay. Like, you know, you got to take baby steps here. I really love their head coach, Dave Canellas. David Tepper is not as much of a meddling owner, but he still has it in him. It'll be interesting to see how Dan Morgan goes about building up that team there in Charlotte. They're not quite there defensively, and I think any time that the Panthers are good, they have a Hall of Fame level player in their front seven, and right now I don't think they have that. Could have had that if they drafted Jalen Walker, but he's on our team, and that's all that matters. With the Falcons, I think the talent's there. Again, I think there's a lot of pressure on people in the organization, namely Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris as well. Like, you gotta prove to the league that you're not bottom quarter at both head coach and general manager. I don't think that they are, but again, what the team's record indicates tells the truth more than anything. Like, the Falcons have, you know, guys who've been head coaches before, you know, on their team, you know, at least Morris with the Buccaneers and then with the Falcons, and then Olbrich has been one, you know, as an interim with the Jets last year. But at some point, you got to be a head coach. You got to be the CEO of the team. You know, we know that Morris is a really good defensive mind, but like, this team needs a head coach. We can't keep coming up dead going into battle against guys that have been more seasoned with this. Like, I mean, we went out and beat the Super Bowl champs last year, Nick Sirianni at their place. But, you know, we've also lost other guys that are kind of largely unproven. The Falcons need to not be at a coaching disadvantage this year. I hope that they're not. But, like, at this time, like, that's still in the back of my mind. Yes, I'm talking smack about Raheem Morris on his birthday. It's okay. We're human. This is a business. You know, I cover sports for a living. And sometimes you just got to say it how it is. I was not super high on the Olbrich hire. I would have much rather had Eberflus or Lou Anarumo, to be honest with you. But I guess the working relationship that that Morris has with Olbrich, I can get behind that. And again, I think that the defense played with a lot more heart in the preseason for Olbrich than they did under Jimmy Lake. But at the same time, like, none of that matters if you're not winning games on Sunday. You know, the losses need to become wins here. You know, we can't be losing games by 7 and 10 points. We got to be winning games by 10 and 7 points. That's kind of the genesis here. As for the Buccaneers, I still think they're a playoff caliber team. I feel like they're more likely to make the playoffs than the Falcons just because, like, that's been the standard for them the last 5 years. I don't necessarily know if they're going to win the division, but I think that, like I had the Buccaneers making it as a 7 seed. The Falcons is a 3 seed because of tiebreakers or whatever. I'm more along the lines of thinking that, like, the NFC West is really only going to get one team in there. Again, I think it's going to be a game or two separating first from last place in that division. Really down to the Vikings. Don't think the Bears are quite there. And I do think the Packers maybe move up a little bit. Maybe they can really challenge the Lions for the division there. You know, they got Micah Parsons. Cowboys aren't making the playoffs, neither are the Giants. And then you got the Eagles and the Commanders there in the NFC East, who I think very highly of. But I think with the Buccaneers, this is going to be a really, like, if the team's going to do what a lot of people think they're going to do, it's going to be contingent on Todd Bowles really asserting himself as a good head coach. And I think he's a good head coach. I think that's been proven. Probably the most solid head coach the Jets have had for a decade now. Over the course of the last decade, almost made the playoffs, didn't quite get there, but, like, looked pretty good there with Ryan Fitzpatrick as their quarterback. They made the playoffs a bunch there, the NFC South with the Bucs. Yes, that's a combination of the Panthers, Falcons, and Saints kind of being down. But, you know, there you have to give credit where it's due in taking advantage of your opportunities. My big concerns with the Buccaneers are it's three things. Number one, one's offense, one's defense, and one's mindset. So I'll go with offense first. They're going to have another new offensive coordinator. It's Josh Grizzard. He's been promoted from within to replace Liam Cohen, who's now the head coach in Jacksonville, who replaced Dave Canales, who's the second-year head coach in Carolina. And then Byron Leftwich was the coach before then. And then you start getting into the Bruce Arians era of it all with the Buccaneers. When you have a brain drain like that at a key position group, like, you can't keep replacing people one after another. This is how all dynasties end. And I wouldn't necessarily say that the Buccaneers have been dynastic, but they've had a stranglehold over everybody in the division for a while now. And I think that having strong coaching has certainly helped. I think the biggest advantage is Jason Light as a general manager. I think he's just running circles around everybody in this division. But when you have a guy promoted from within in Grizzard who's unproven, because again, like, Canellas had been with Seattle for a while. Liam Cohen had been with Kentucky and the LA Rams. Like, they've been around a little bit more. I think they're going to entrust Baker Mayfield with a little bit more in the offense. And I don't necessarily know if that's a good thing. Love Baker Mayfield as a player. I think he's really talented, gets the most out of his physical skill set. But when he feels cocky and over-empowered, he kind of tends to, for lack of a better word, believe his own press clippings, thinks he's more athletic than what he actually is. And that could have worked at Oklahoma in the Big 12, but that won't work in the NFL. We saw him get in trouble with that in Cleveland before. And I think if Baker's going to, like, let it rip, it may be like letting Russ cook, but maybe not to that degree, because I think Mayfield's just a more self-aware person and a more likable guy in general. But, like, you're asking a lot of a guy in a spot where, like, the team really needs him to. If he plays up to that standard, then, yeah, Tampa can win the division and get back in the playoffs. But, again, this is a team that I think has a finite ceiling. Like, I don't see them getting to the conference championship game. Like, I don't see them getting past Detroit, Washington, or Philadelphia, the division. Maybe not even Green Bay. Like, in all honesty, like, they can win the division, win a playoff game. But, like, anything beyond, like, the divisional round, I don't see it for them this year, because I think the defense has kind of got some issues, particularly with the pass rush. I think Todd Bowles is going to take a more hands-on approach there to really help the team out. And that's basically going to allow Mayfield to take on a bigger role from the offense. And that could work out wonderfully for them, but it could also backfire. And then the third thing for the Bucs is I think Jason Light's kind of starting to really feel himself, kind of feel his own press clippings. Like, I remember writing something for fansided.com about the Buccaneers, and he was, like, just dogging Devin White and other bad picks he'd make. Like, anytime you're putting forth something with that kind of quotes on there, it's really arrogant. And again, like, these players aren't, like, you know, retired. This isn't like a tell-all after you've done your job. Like, these players are still out there. And it kind of makes you wonder if people really want to go play for Tampa, if, like, it doesn't work out for you, like, because like may just dog you. And I don't know. The optically, that didn't land very well with me. But again, I've been saying his praise for a long time as a really strong front office executive. But he did admit to some mistakes early on in his career. He's been all about character and people that have good character and whatnot. But honestly, his way of dogging people that didn't have it, you know, it's kind of like calling the kettle black in some capacities. So Tampa's going to be really good. But we need to split with them. And it starts by winning the game on Sunday. The last thing I want to say in this segment before I move on, I do realize that former Falcons general manager Thomas Dimitroff is now working in the Saints front office under Mickey Loomis. And I know he turned heel and, you know, he had been kind of out of the NFL for the last 4 or 5 years. He was kind of bound to get back into it. Look, Terry Fontenot is with the Saints. Now he's here. There's been a lot of players and a lot of people and coaches who have worked for both organizations. I mean, I don't necessarily know like what sort of trade secrets he's going to be able to provide the Saints. I mean, maybe that like Arthur Blank kind of has people on their toes up in Flyer Branch a little bit, but like whatever. It'll be interesting to see like what he learns from working under Gail Benson and alongside Mickey Loomis there in New Orleans. Okay, this is a guy that was a really strong and successful general manager for the Falcons, oversaw the best run this franchise has ever had, but obviously really struggled drafting down the stretch and really kind of liked to pay his own players who are good, great money, and that kind of got us burned here a little bit. But look, he should be allowed to go make money. He should be allowed to go pursue his career here. But again, I don't think he's ever going to be an NFL GM again, because let's put it this way. In the NFL, you really only get one shot at this. They're more likely to hire a retread in terms of a head coach and a coordinator than they are front office executive. I don't know why that is. Probably because I think when you're a front office executive, you kind of get like two head coaches to kind of ride it through. Like, again, he was there with Mike Smith and he was there with Dan Quinn. He got to survive the Smitty termination, not necessarily the Dan Quinn one. And it's the same sort of thing with Terry Fontenot. He got to survive the Arthur Smith, and his career is now tied to Raheem Morris. I think that's kind of become very commonplace here in Atlanta, and we'll see what happens beyond that. Done with Around the Perimeter, let's move on to the second half of our show with some blow the whistle or blow the whistle. Is Elijah Wilkinson the right call to replace Caleb McGarry at starting right tackle? Nah. This doesn't do much for me. Look, he has to. This is just the next man up sort of thing. But again, at the top of the show, I'm like, this is kind of why my expectations have been tempered a little bit. If McGarry was healthy, then you're talking about being plus in three crucial spots along our offensive line. This doesn't necessarily, but if McGarry was there, we know that he's going to road grade in the running game. We know that pass protection is not his forte. We'll see what we could have maybe seen what happens in him protecting Penix's blindside. But having him out there, you know, that takes pressure off of Ryan Neuzel being like a full-time starter for a full season. Like he started the second half of last year, but certainly make me feel more comfortable letting Drew Dahlman walk in free agency. And then it's also like, okay, Matthew Bergeron, you know, you can kind of work your way into this. Now in year two for him out of Syracuse playing a new position, he's got to get it. So it's really imperative for not only Lindstrom and Matthews to play at their high standard, but for Bergeron and Neuzel to really step up. And even though Wilkinson's kind of a guy that I think the Falcons entrusted to be like, okay, like, next man up, you're going to be part of the A-man offensive line rotation here. Scares me. This shows a vulnerability. Like if we were to play the Steelers again and like got TJ Watt, like he's going to get 5 sacks. Look, I understand that Penix is far more mobile than Cousins, but like not necessarily like Cousins was a statue in week one. This kind of scares me a little bit. And I think more importantly than anything, we can't have our offense being operating on a that's necessarily a shortened field, but like a diminished field. Like we can't like we got to use as much of the field to make space and plays and everything like that. I mean, I know this is the NFL. The hash marks are closer. If it's college, it's a little bit wider. You can do a little bit more tricky things with formations and everything like that. But I think the best thing here is just everybody in the offense stepping up and McGarry's absence, including Wilkinson. I also think that Penix, you know, this puts more pressure on him to succeed. Hopefully he can do it. And I also think that like this is all about Zach Robinson really taking a step up in a second year as an offensive coordinator. I think that like he's got to basically kind of his good play calls. Like again, like this is the guy that I think has the future of an NFL head coach. I mean, to be honest with you, if Mike Gundy doesn't work out this year at Stillwater, maybe you think Robinson goes back to Oklahoma State. I think that'd be an awesome opportunity for him. Regardless, this guy's he's getting better as a play caller, still relatively new to this because, again, he came over from the Rams, and that's all Sean McVay. But, again, we've seen other guys who have left that organization that have gone on to do good things, whether that's Matt LaFleur, whether that's Zach Taylor, Zach Robinson, Raheem Morris now. Like, it's all coming up here. But the Wilkinson starting at right tackle scares me. I want to be proven wrong. But again, for the most part, you have to wonder, this can't be the reason our season goes under or goes aside or just becomes just pedestrianly mediocre again. That's really the biggest concern I have with this Falcons is, like, there's just not a lot of depth. I mean, we saw it in the preseason. Like, we didn't win any of those preseason games because maybe our backups aren't that great. Or third stringers weren't that great to begin with. Football's a game of injuries, and maybe this is a downside to paying two quarterbacks a premium amount of money. You know, that money that you're paying Cousins, maybe that could go somewhere else. I understand there's a whole dead cap component here, but you know, the only thing that matters here for Fondo is if like Penix works, because you can't go 0-2 with that. If that happens, they'll bring in a new GM. I don't know if Raheem Morris gets the axe, but I think the pressure is more on Fontenot than him at this point. But, yeah. Also, I got to say this. I feel pretty smart by not hiring Bill Belichick. I mean, he looked awful for North Carolina versus TCU. You had Petey Pablo, you had Michael Jordan, Lawrence Taylor, Roy Williams all watching this game, and the Tar Heels were just ass. I feel bad for my fan-sided colleague, Cody Williams. Surely he's got some thoughts to say about that on tomorrow's episode of False Starts. Definitely check that out. But look, we have a decent team right now. But right now, I'm just like, man, it's amazing how like one key injury really shapes the impression I have here. And again, McGarry was not like a top five player in this team. Top 10, certainly top 15. But with him being out, that doesn't help this team at all. The good news is it provides an opportunity for Wilkinson to go out there and make a name for himself. And again, I think any time that the Falcons have had an offensive lineman with a chip on her shoulder and something to prove, they've shined. You know, I remember, you know, growing up, you know, what Todd Weiner wasn't great. I mean, Tom McClure was like Todd Weiner wasn't like a high draft pick. Tom McClure was a 7th round pick. Ryan Schrader was undrafted. Andy Levitre was kind of also ran with the Titans. Chris Chester, they thought he was kind of too cooked coming over from Washington. I mean, not everybody can be Alex Mack. Not everybody can be Jake Matthews. Not everybody can be Bob Whitfield. But, like, there's opportunities to be had here. And, again, it's all about the best 5 guys working together in unison. And I hope Wilkinson can be part of that. Because if he can't, we got to find that guy very quickly because this season cannot go awry because for this one injury. And with that in mind, let's go on to our penultimate topic from the highest perch in Flyer Branch. Just an injury update heading into the season. This is really about 2 guys here that I think is important to touch on. That would be edge rusher, 1st-round pick Jalen Walker, and number 2 wide receiver Darnell Mooney. And again, Walker played a little bit in the preseason, but he's been kind of dealing with a hamstring sort of issue, some sort of soft tissue stuff. And then Mooney basically missed all of preseason with the shoulder injury. So Raheem Morris, again, we'll have a better update about this. You know, this is Wednesday. Obviously, the reports come out on Thursday. And you'll see stuff on Sunday before kickoff. But here's kind of the vibe with all this. Raheem Morris said earlier in the week, maybe the end of last week, like he said this, that like, he's kind of keeping it close to the vest. He feels optimistic about both guys being able to play in week 1. It is very important that Darnell Mooney did not go on IR to start. So I think the Falcons believe that he's going to be back within the first 4 games. And frankly, we need him because Drake London can't do it all. And for as great as Ray-Ray McCloud was last year as wide receiver three, he was kind of more of a special teams guy coming out of Clemson. He really earned his role last year. But like putting him up to number two, that's a bit, a little bit too much of an ask right now. So, and again, maybe Pitts needs to really step up too. I mean, frankly, he just needs to step up and play up to his standard this year, because otherwise he's not going to be part of this team in 26. I think with what Raheem Morris was saying is he's leaning towards both could probably play, but it almost kind of feels like it's definitely going to happen with Jalen Walker, whereas it's kind of like a day-by-day basis with Mooney. I think with Walker, it's important to know is he's going to be in a backup role. He's going to be backing up, I believe, Arnold Bichetti or Leonard Floyd, kind of opposite of James Pierce Jr. So again, like he's not being tasked with being a starter like Mooney would be. And again, Mooney was a highly productive player for the Falcons last year. Huge part of why I was so bullish on this offense moving forward, because it's not just London. Mooney is a great player too. And I think for me, like as long as he can run and go out there and be a decoy, then I think that that takes some pressure off of London and McCloud, because Penix doesn't have to look his way. Maybe a little bit, but like if his shoulder is kind of really banged up in some instances, then like, okay, I would much rather have Mooney miss this game versus the Bucs when they're depleted too than lose him for like the rest of the season because we rushed him out there too early. But that being said, like, it's a new quarterback. It's a relatively new offensive coordinator. There's a lot of new here. And even though the Buccaneers are working in a new offensive coordinator, it's kind of a well-oiled machine with them. Like we all know Mike Evans is on his way to the Hall of Fame. Baker Mayfield was number one overall pick, former Heisman winner, perennial Pro Bowler. Like we know what the Buccaneers can do. But I think also the fact that like, I don't necessarily know how great our defense is going to be to start. So the Falcons kind of have to score some points. And, you know, they won that game on Thursday night in Atlanta, you know, by way of a shootout, which was Kirk Cousins' best game as a Falcon. Really did a good job spreading the ball around. Again, I want to see Mooney play. If he doesn't, then, like, you know, we're probably looking more likely at him playing versus the Vikings next week or, you know, maybe potentially on down the line. You got the Commanders and the Panthers. So, like, he's going to play in one of those four games, at least, hopefully all four. I most certainly hope he's playing versus the Commanders, because otherwise, like, what are we doing? But at the same time, like, I understand that the Falcons need him for the long haul, but also you need to win this game because, you know, I don't think we're going to go win in Tampa. That's a tall ask. That's the one game in divisional play I'm, like, the most apprehensive about. You know, it's more likely that the Falcons sweep the Saints than the Falcons get a win in Tampa. But again, that happened last year. They didn't sweep the Saints, but they won in Tampa. They swept the Buccaneers. It's just wild. And as far as Jalen Walker is concerned, like, it's important for him to be impactful in the first quarter of the season. This is a guy that I love watching play at my alma mater of Georgia, a true Swiss Army knife out there for the Dogs. He can line up everywhere, but you know, if he's not productive, then we may understand like why he fell to the Falcons at 15. Like I thought he was going to go to Carolina at 8, and they went with Tetero McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona instead. This could come back to bite them in the ass because, you know, Walker's going to be going up against his hometown Panthers twice a year going forward now that he's in Atlanta. But he grew up a lot in Athens. Atlanta's now his home. Very excited for him. Plus, you don't want to have anything change the narrative of like, oh, my God, we can't draft Georgia players in the first two rounds. Like, that's so stupid. Like, I don't know why the Falcons haven't gotten around that. Like, and it's not just Georgia. It's like, if you've got a dynastic team in college football, you know, what Alabama was prior to this year, Ohio State now, Texas now, like places that have talent, like just get the best players. It doesn't matter where they play. But like, if you're at a blue chip place like this, like just go get players in there. Don't worry about proximity. Don't worry about them failing. And honestly, I'm not too worried about Walker failing here. I do think that it may be kind of a slow burn with him. Whereas I think James Pierce Jr. may be more inclined to kind of go off here in week one, get a sack of Mayfield. Again, love to see this pass rush kind of manifest here. You know, with Leonard Floyd, with Arnold Ebiketie, with Braylon Trice, with D'Angelo Malone, and these two rookies. Again, not super high on the defensive line here, although I think Braden Dorlis could be special. Really kind of wondering what if Ryuk is going to factor in anything. Same with Zach Harrison. David Onyemata just kind of feels like he's just kind of there. But again, like, got to generate some pressure here up front. And I think Walker and Pierce being able to do that is good. But I think more importantly, if just tie a bow on this, if one guy is going to play between Walker and Mooney on Sunday, it's going to be Walker. I hope it's both. And if it's not both, then we're probably not going to win. But I'm certainly hoping it. Please, like, just get healthy. We got time out there. They may not practice very much this week because, again, it's Wednesday, late Wednesday morning here, and this game is not until Sunday. So you got Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You got four full days to really get fully healthy. And, again, it's all gamesmanship. It's a divisional game, and let's not beat around the bush here. So, yeah, that's kind of the two big injuries here. So let's move on. Let's make a pick here. Our last topic of the day, I saw the line. Again, I'm probably going to be doing solo shows for now. I just feel that y'all want to hear what I have to say about the Falcons versus what some of my Minute Media colleagues have to say about other teams. This is about us, not about them. This is about our team this year. If the time is right, I'll bring somebody else back on, but, like, super busy with my new role here with FanSided. So, yeah, let's make a pick against the spread versus the Buccaneers. Right now, I think the spread has the Falcons getting 2.5 points at home versus the Buccaneers, and I saw the over-under total is 47.5. Here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to go out on a limb. I've got a final score prediction here. I think the Falcons win and cover in the overhits. I think the Falcons are going to win 27-24 because of a 40-something yard field goal off the leg of Younghoe Koo. That's going to be a very positive tone setter for the team. He's going to get back to his clutch ways. And I think what sets this play up is either like a big play by the defense, like maybe Bates picks off Mayfield, maybe Pierce forces a fumble on Bucky Irving or something like that. But it's going to be a close game. I do think it's going to be relatively sloppy. I've been noticing that about, you know, watching college football this past weekend, maybe the NFL too. Again, not a lot of these guys are playing very much, so they kind of got to, like, you know, get into game rhythm and everything like that. There will be turnovers. I don't think it's going to be a particularly great game out of Penix. I do think that the running game will lead the way. It'll probably be more of the same of, like, Bijan Robinson, you know, keeping the chains moving, and then Tyler Allgeier goes out there with, like, a big run or two to really kind of break things open. As far as where Atlanta wins it, I think what they do a good job of in this game is I think the secondary kind of locks down on the receiving core. Mike Evans will get his, but I think that there will be some inconsistencies with Mayfield trying to get the nuances of this offense, you know, trying to get on the same page with Grizzard. Again, we're lucky here. We're also lucky that Tristan Wirfs is probably not going to play. So maybe you could be able to generate some pressure, throw some timing rhythm off with Mayfield. So I think that, like, the Buccaneers passing game is not quite what it's going to be. Again, they may light us up like a Christmas tree. He may throw for 450 yards and we get our ass kicked. But, like, that's kind of how I'm seeing this. And I would say, like, where the Buccaneers kind of lose it in terms of this is, like, I think there's some challenges there on third and fourth down. I think that, like, they're going to be well below 50% on that regard, maybe more so, like, on third down than fourth down. And I just kind of feel like the Falcons defense is going to be a little more bend but don't break. Again, this is going to come down to, like, being a little bit better at tackling, being a little bit more swarming in the defensive backfield. Again, the defense is pretty healthy for the most part, and I think that they – I don't know if it necessarily gets in the Buccaneers' head, like, oh, we can't beat these guys. But, like, I think we're going to have one of the better games of the early afternoon window here in Atlanta. I'm very excited for what's going to happen here. But, again, on record, I've got the Falcons winning 27-24. That means the Falcons cover the 2.5-point spread by more than that. You know, And then I think that the over is 47 and a half. So you're looking at, that'd be what, 51 points. So yeah, the over hits there too. It'll be like, again, it'll be 24-24 all headed into the final minutes where Koo puts like a 42-yard field goal through the uprights. That's how I want to see this game happen. That's what I'm hoping for. I don't want to see this team get blown out. I want a close game one way or another because I respect Tampa Bay a lot, and I think that they're a good team. And if the Falcons go out there and do what they need to do, then we're looking at a team that could win, you know, double-digit games this year. Again, that's what we're hoping for. And that's all I really got today. So, you know, this is episode 50, this was episode 57 of the Blogging Dirty podcast. You can follow me, John Bueller, on Twitter or the X at Bueller118 right there. You know, you can follow the show along on YouTube at Blogging Dirty FS. You can follow along all the content there on X at Blogging Dirty. You know, be sure to read bloggingdirty.com, fansided.com, NFL Spin Zone. Really just any fan-sided or Minute Media based company, just any articles, just click on it, read it, consume our content. It's really good stuff. We're everywhere. We're really excited. Again, football season's back here, everybody. You know, we're getting really close to really picking up a lot of subscribers here. Very excited about this team. And again, I can't wait to see what happens in week one because it's going to give me a lot of stuff to talk about next Wednesday. Again, you guys have been utterly fantastic. It's really been nice getting to know each and every one of you. Cannot wait for the game on Sunday. Let's rise up, guys. Let's do this. Once again, thanks for listening. And this is the Blogging Dirty Podcast.